I'll go ahead and start now so I can give our speakers enough time. So these are lightning talks, so they'll each be 5 minutes. They're, everything's automatic, so there won't typically be any time for questions afterward. So we'll go ahead and start right away with Martin Sill.
Thanks. Hello, my name is Martin Sill, and I'm a biostatistician working for the pediatric neuro-oncology department of the German Cancer Research Center, and we are using R to analyze DNA methylation data of human brain tumors. And I'm waiting on for my next slide. Actually, so DNA methylation is the attachment of a methyl group to a cytosine base, followed by a guanine base. At so-called CpG sites in the genome. And DNA methylation is known to regulate gene expression and gene silencing, and it plays an important role in embryonic development, in aging, and in all kinds of diseases like cancer. And to measure this DNA methylation, we use this Illumina 550K methylation array, which measures the methylation of 450,000 CpG sites across the human genome on this beta scale, where 0 indicates no methylation and 1 indicates methylation. This is the current WHO classification of brain tumors. That enlists roughly 100 entities of brain tumors, and we have compiled a reference set of 3,000 samples of methylation data of brain tumors that cover 82 of these classes, and we've performed a non-linear dimension reduction with this data set, and this is the scatter plot result showing that these classes can be clearly distinct. Separated by using methylation data, and to learn this methylation-based classification of brain tumors, we've applied a random forest classifier using the RF permutated importance measure to select important CpG probes for the classification, and taking the imbalanced class sizes by subsampling to the minority class into account. And we also incorporated a calibration model, which basically maps the raw FR random forest scores into accurate class probability estimates, which can then be used for diagnostic purposes in the clinic. And we evaluated these class probabilities by using the Breyer score. We validated this classifier by using a nested threefold cross-validation. We incorporated this inner threefold cross-validation loop to validate the calibration model and the resulting class probability estimates. And the overall results are somewhat pretty good. We have a misclassification error rate of 4.28% for our calibrated scores, and also the Breyer score is relatively low, indicating that the class probability estimates are working fine, and most errors occur in tumors that are closely related. And we've packed all this into an R package called MNP, which is not publicly available, but we shared with collaborating institutes worldwide. And you can, as you can see, can easily load your raw data and then generate interactive reports using R Markdown. And besides giving class probability estimates, also generates interactive TSNE scatter plots with the diagnostic sample together with our reference set using the Plotly library. And in addition to methylation, we can also measure copy number variation using this methylation data. And we do this by using this Conumi package, which is available via Bioconductor. And I've also created an interactive copy number variation profile using the Plotly package, which allows us then to zoom into the single chromosomes and see changes. And we have also a website available where users can sign up and register an account and then upload raw data files and get reports back In this website, we have already processed more than 3,000 samples since December last year. And And finally, I would like to thank my co-workers, which is basically the last slide. So, thanks.
Multivariate PAT and existing R packages. This is a collaboration in our department between our statistical colleagues, Tanya, Michelle, and Elena, people from Open Analytics, Nicolas, Adrian, and Robin, and myself. I'm a process chemist. Process chemist has to assure that the active pharmaceutical ingredient from the medicine gets scales up to ton scale. Obviously, for that, we will not start at ton scale, we will start at small scale. In the next slide, you can see such a typical setup. For this talk, I will concentrate on the IR data. The IR is a process analytical technology which will generate spectra over time. We also are following the set with offline UPLC data. As you can see, there are some challenges to this data set. Quite some data points are covered, and these are multiple overlapping compounds. You have to imagine reactants going to a product, and you have a three-dimensional space, an absorbance in a time and a wavelength. These 1,000 spectra over 20-25 experiments are cumbersome to extract by hand. Hence, we are looking at a solution which can handle this volume. We sat together and saw that R proved to be feasible to handle this. In-house, we worked together with Open Analytics and developed a package to be able to do the typical spectroscopic treatments, baseline correction normalization, but also to be able to expand it later, to combine multiple data sources. For this talk, I will concentrate on the PAT part. The goals are to follow online the evolution of these main components during the reaction progress. Endpoint detection of reactions without offline data. For this, we looked at typical methods like principal component analysis, factor analysis for bicluster acquisition, and the non-negative matrix factorization. All of the above and more are implemented in the R. All of these methods are, in essence, dimensionality reduction. And the matrix that is made has no unique solution. For PCA, we know the orthogonality of components is important. For FIB, it is the independence of components and sparseness of the loadings. And NMF generates non-negative loadings and scores. These packages are all into implemented. And the big thing is, you can see, like this morning there was a talk by Nicolas about the hierarchical NMF. We can immediately incorporate this in our research. This would be very difficult to do with a commercial solution. It would take many times before a commercial vendor would be able to incorporate new technology into his packages. There are some challenges to his app. PCA is sensitive to non-regularities in the measurement. Fabia will require a number, an upper bound of factors to analyze, and an initialization algorithm. NMF, on the other hand, is also sensitive to the number of components and requires initialization, or can require initialization. But there you can use template spectra to initialize these components. How do we go about our work? We combine all the experiments in one matrix. Multiple reactions will have the same components, the same compounds. You are looking at the same chemical reaction. It would be possible to analyze them separately, but then the loadings would vary and the score interpretation would get really difficult. We have shown this visually in the next slide, where you can see that we are combining many experiments. Remember, we have this 3D spectrum. And on the left-hand side, you can see the spectra evolving. And you can extract trends with it with or without a template spectrum, as you can use in some methodology. Now, we have been trying these different approaches on different data sets. These are three different experiments. What we want to see here is difference. And for the typical workhorse principal component analysis, honestly, as a chemist, I can see something in the first component, maybe something in the third component, but the second component, that's off limits. So here, indeed, to follow the first component, that's possible, but we are looking to find at least three different species. Fabia, remember, that was developed for a completely different application, fares in the same way. It was developed for a biotechnology application, but the advantage of R is that you can try it on different problems and learn from this. And this is the same as for the last part, where we would have, indeed, the NMF being applied. And in the NMF, there we were able to, indeed, extract the three components. It provides a decomposition to these three different components related to real chemical entities. And again, as we saw in the morning, it has been applied on different problems, but now we can expand it to different, to new ways of analyzing data. So we are already arriving at the conclusion. That's way too much text. I will stick to the last two. Multivariate analysis can be used as a first-run analysis to look at the data, but we would also be interested in the future to look at fleeting chemical species, intermediates, which we cannot see by typical techniques like PLS, because they will collapse back or form the product. This, from a chemistry perspective, to understand the reaction would really be a bonus, but that's for the future. What do we have now? We have a process evolution Shiny app running and Shiny proxy within Janssen to assist in this, and a first proof of concept using NMF to be able to real-time model and online monitor our reactions is in the making. Again, because a time penalty for the NMF makes this possible.
Good afternoon. So today I'm talking about R package called R cell, which I wrote for the purpose of estimating mutation rates. So you may ask why we want to estimate the mutation rates. Because the concept of a mutation is almost everywhere in many, many branches of life sciences. For example, the most important area is antibiotic resistance. And the next area is food safety, and also infectious disease, cancer, and so on. The most noticeable in the past 10 years is our global problem with antibiotic resistance. So actually, this problem is about how fast mutation occurs. So that's why I want to estimate the mutation rates. So here, let me first clarify what is the mutation rate. You see, when the normal cell divides, it could just split into two normal cells, as in the upper diagram, which is fairly often, but fairly rarely. Really, it could be one normal cell plus one mutated cell or mutants. So this is the probability for mutation to occur, which I call mutation rate. So you see, here is a diagram. In this slide, I have a typo, I'm sorry. We see five mutations, but as a result of these five mutations, we have 16 mutants. So the problem is this. You cannot see mutations, you cannot see mutants, but we can make mutants visible. So here is one example. What happens in the test tube? Starts with four normal cells, then we have one mutant cell, next we have three mutant cells, and finally we have many mutant cells. So how can we estimate the probability for mutation to occur? So that is the purpose of my package. So biologists have to conduct a so-called fluctuation experiment. Here, to simplify, I have five test tubes. At each tube, mutation occurs. But you have to transfer the contents from tube to a plate to see how many mutants you have. For example, in the first one, you have one mutant. So here, the key thing is to estimate how many mutations occurred in each tube on the average. If we know this, the formula is very simple. You can just go from the number of mutations to the mutation rate. It's very simple. So our package tries to make life easier to allow you to estimate it. So here, you see, we have experiments. In the first tuber, we have 33 mutants. In the next one, we have 18. Next one, we have 839 and so on. So how can we figure out the number of mutations? M, use Newton.LD, that, then you see, after some iteration, we get an estimate of M. And similarly, we need a confidence interval for M, the lower limit and the upper limit. Then again, you use confidence.LD, then I get the upper limit and the other the low limit from 8.6 to 13.19, which means expected number of mutations could be between 8.6 to 13.19. Another problem RSF that wants to overcome is this. Sometimes there are too many mutants in each tuber, so you have to just take a small portion from each tuber. For example, if you can take only 10%. In that case, the so-called predicting efficiency is 0.10. You see, you can only take 1%, which increase uncertainty, will make life even more difficult. So here is one example where we take only 1% of each tuber, then the Milton counts are here, then you say E equals 0.01, which means I only take 1% from each tuber. So second line get an point estimate, the next line get a confidence interval. So here, the last thing I want to address is how to estimate mutation rates. Why we want to estimate mutation rates? Because when you measure mutation rates, usually you just want to compare two or three different mutation rates. So how can you do this? Again, you can use RSelvador. Yes. So here's one very good example. There's a dispute over whether or not the European strains are less bad than the Beijing genotype. So that is a fairly controversial problem. We have to compare mutation rates pairwise. So if you use my package, you can do this. For example, here I have two experiments, experiment one, experiment two, but the second tuber has almost twice as many cells as in the first tuber. So that makes life not so easy. So I use LRIT.mk, you can estimate the mutation rates. The first number is the chi-square, the second number is the p-value. So anyway, this sounds very easy, but it took a lot of computation. So I want to thank Texas A&M University for allowing me to use a lot of CPU hours. Thank you very much for your attention.
I guess I could get started now. I'm going to preface this with I'm not a statistician, I'm a biologist. I work for the Public Health Agency of Canada, and part of the reason I'm here is that I do a lot of training for everybody. But I'm here to talk about Plasmid Profiler, which is a tool for exploration and visualization of plasmid-mediated outbreaks. So these are my old slides. This is going to go really badly. I updated these slides and they didn't change it. Okay, well that's me. You can all tell what I look like now. I'm technically a computational biologist and the resident R trainer there, and I do a lot of workshops for R for all the other biologists in the building. This is what I'm talking about today. So Plasmid Profiler is an R package and a Galaxy workflow that was developed to deal with multi-species outbreaks in a Canadian hospital. So what we found was many bacteria with the same antibiotic resistance. It was being transferred around via plasmids, which I'm going to get into right now. So I didn't know how much background people would have on bacterial genetics, but so unlike human, the 23 pairs of chromosomes, bacteria generally only have one, and they also can have extra chromosomal DNA in the form of plasmids, which is accessory functions for their fitness, so they can have better antimicrobial resistance. And now we're moving on. Okay, so this is typical bacterial replication. I'm sure you're all pretty aware of this. That's why I updated my slides. But in normal bacterial replication, the genome is duplicated, so the plasmids and the chromosome are duplicated, and then they're partitioned either side of the bacterial cell, which is then split into the offspring with one of each plasmid going. Here is an example of what we're talking about with incompatibility groups. If you notice the black triangles and the little half moon, those represent different incompatibility groups, and only one incompatibility group per plasmid per cell can exist. So if you look at the right-hand side, the left is the same as before. Only the half moon goes onto each, but only one of the two black triangle plasmids goes. The other problem that we're dealing with is that vertical inheritance in plasmids is only half the story. It's not always parent cell to daughter cell or offspring. They can be horizontally transferred by between bacteria or from the environment, along with mobile elements transferring genes between plasmids themselves. They are very promiscuous, and so this is exactly what I just said. So the resistance in this outbreak was a carbapenemase, so it gives them resistant to carbapenem antibiotics, and it was held on a mobile element called a transposon, which can very easily transfer between plasmids, like so. And so this was our conundrum. How do we track the way a mobile element is moving through a population, and how do we track that population through a population of plasmids, and how do we track that population of plasmids across a population of bacteria? from multiple species, multiple genera. So that is why we created the plasmid profiler. So our goal with it was to identify known plasmids from next generation sequencing data, in this case Illumina MiSeq short reads, and to identify the resistance genes within them and then give a nice visualization of the results. The caveat is we didn't want to rely on de novo assembly of the plasmids because that is incredibly computational intensive and not always successful. So this is the way the pipeline works. Our inputs are next-generation sequencing data, again in the form of Illumina MiSeq short reads, and then antimicrobial resistance gene sequences or any other genes of interest that the researcher provides. They are compared to a curated database of plasmids derived from NCBI. So here it is. This is done by a program called SRST2 in the Galaxy workflow. The reads from the next generation sequencing are mapped to each of the plasmids in the database after that database has been cut down using k-mer matching. The statistics you derive from these matches are coverage and divergence. Next, we use BLAST to identify genes of interest within those plasmids. So we're looking for replicon sequences to identify incompatibility groups, and we're also looking for genes of interest in the form of antimicrobial resistance. Don't know what slide's next. Let's find out. Okay, here's what the package plasmid profiler actually does. We calculate a sureness value, which is a normalized measure of the difference between the coverage, so that's the entire length of the reference plasmid that's covered by the reads, and the divergence, so that's the difference between the reads, the sequence the reads gives and the reference. This is the output from the plasmid profiler along with tabular data. On the left, you can see an ape-produced dendrogram based on plasmid content. The plasmids are colored by incompatibility group across the plot, and this is done with ggplot's tile geometry. And that's it. All right. Sorry, it was the wrong slides.
Okay, so hi everyone. My name is Junyan Lu. I'm a postdoc from EMBL at Heidelberg, Germany. I'm really happy to be here with you at this conference. I'm really enjoying it. So today I'm going to share with you a case study of using R and Shiny in multi-omics studies and personalized medicine. So as some of you may know, cancers are very heterogeneous. So that means different patients may have different genetic backgrounds. So this heterogeneity can lead to varied clinical outcomes and treatment response. That's why personalized patient care is an urgent need in cancer treatment. But personalized medicine is usually easier said than done. That's because human body is an extremely complex system. So a promising way to study personalized medicine is try to use multi-omics approaches to study the mechanisms of diseases from different layers of the human body. So in our study, we first performed the ex vivo drug response test on primary tumor samples from a large cohort of patients. Blood cancer patients, and also we performed using multi-omics techniques like transcriptome profiling, SNP array, and to get the idea of the patient genetic background, and then we use R and bioconductor to study those correlations, and we hope this can help with the clinical treatment of those blood cancer patients. So obviously, a single working group cannot obtain all the multi-omics data set. So this project involves extensive collaborations among different working groups. So one clear challenge is that how to manage the multi-omics data and how to share and visualize the analysis to achieve efficient collaboration. So we developed a workflow using bioconductor packages and external softwares to process and integrate those data set, like we use Cell HTS2 to process drug screening data and DSeq2 to process RNA sequencing data. Then on top of this, we also developed a bioconductor package, a primary blood cancer cell encyclopedia PACE to store those multi-omics data sets. And this package also contains functions for query, transformation, and plotting of those data sets. And because most of our collaborators are wet lab biologists and clinicians, so they have very limited or none experience of coding. So we have also developed a Shiny-based platform to visualize our data interactively. So I will briefly show you this Shiny platform for the drug screening data set. So we can use the first panel of this app to select drug screening data set and batches for visualize or for the subsequent analysis. And one important feature of this app is that it allows the users to examine the raw data of the drug screening plate. So this is a plotly heat map showing the raw intensity on the drug screening plate. Then our collaborators can figure out what's going wrong and how can they improve the drug screening quality. And also some exploratory analysis like PCA, TSD can be performed using this platform. And the samples can also be colored or annotated based on their genetic backgrounds and to generate some interesting hypotheses. And also, our users can perform some simple hypothesis tests like the t-test to study the correlations between genetic backgrounds and the drug response by themselves. So this really frees me up for some more complex analysis. Okay, so this is a short presentation, but I hope I have convinced you that R and Shiny are powerful tools for multi-omics and personalized medicine studies. This can facilitate collaborations with wet lab experiments by allowing real-time quality check and hypothesis generation, so which can increase efficiency and lower the cost. And we are planning to make this platform a general tool for drug screening. So I will thank my collaborators from German Cancer Research Center and Heidelberg University, and also my supervisor Wolfgang Huber for statistical advice and help. And thank you for your attention.
Hello, my name is Beibei, and I'm a PhD student from Max Planck Institute of Psychiatry. And today I'm going to talk about our package, SIMFI. It is a package to simulate multiple phenotypes with epistatic interactions. So in case some of you are not familiar with genetics, I would like to show you very simple background of this. So first, the genotype is the set of the heritable genetic identity in our DNA, and phenotypes is a trait like body height or brain size. And epistasis here means the interaction between two or more genetic loci. There are many simulation tools developed for evaluating type 1 error rates for new statistical association tests, but none of them can take care of the epistasis very well. And in the meantime, the detection of dominance or the interaction it is involved in have been reported recently. So we have the idea to develop a tool that can handle this problem. For modeling epistasis, there are different models, and as you can refer from here. So among them, COCOM model has been reported as more appropriate than the others for the study of epistasis between genes. So our package was conducted based on COCOM epistasis model. I wouldn't show you the details of this model, but I would like to show you the main function, SIMFI. It is like a pipeline of all the functions in the packages, which is easy to use. What we need is the information for the parameters for the simulation and also the genotype information. After having this information, then the following steps can be run automatically in the function. So one thing I want to point out is that if the heritability of the phenotype is given in the simulation information, the simulated phenotype will have the certain values as setted heritability. But if you don't give it, it will have not happen. So for conduct multiple phenotypes, if you said they share the same genetic basis, they are correlated. Otherwise, to get their certain correlation, converting through a covariance matrix is an option. So here has the simple example. After installation, there are two demo files, include the parameters for simulation and also the genotype information. Then you can just give the parts to the main function, and you will get the phenotypes that you want. Otherwise, you can also do it like per function in the package. In summary, okay, in a summary, so as you can see, the this package considers the abscesses with dominance-related genetic effects. You can also use it without simulating the abscesses. And another feature is it can simulate phenotypes with given heritability. Also, it can support single and multiple phenotype. And we have the flexible genotype format, which includes the Plink format. Well, also for this package is quite, I would say, simple. So we only consider the COCOM abscesses model. In the future, we would like to apply other models in. Also, we have very fixed input format for the simulation parameters. Yeah. At the end, thanks to my colleagues, and also thank you for your attention.
Good afternoon, everybody. why not? I'll use the 2 seconds. My name is John Newell. I'm a biostatistician from the National University of Ireland in Galway, and I want to introduce you to a package that my colleagues and I have written, thank you, called DINOM. And DINOM is for the generation of dynamic nomograms. It's a nice, simple wrapper function in Shiny that allows you visualize more or less any statistical model you can dream of to allow somebody interact with that and for statisticians to look under the hood to get an idea as to what was actually done. So we're a group of shiny, happy people. We're particularly interested in the idea of translation. You've heard of translational medicine, the idea of bench to bedside. Well, we coined a similar expression a few years ago called translational statistics. And the idea there is that we as statisticians embed good clinical practice across all aspects of clinical research, but particularly focus on the communication of research findings. And this is important when you look at things like this. Here's the Daily Mail that had a headline recently, why eating just one sausage a day raises your cancer risk by 20%. Is that 5 sausages and you're dead? I don't think so. It sounds like it's a misinterpretation, typically from something like an odds ratio that has appeared in the literature somewhere, and there's a misunderstanding. So here's something we're familiar with, the Titanic data. Look at the odds ratio returned for the gender effect. So we're saying the multiplicative effect in terms of odds is 12 times higher for females compared to males in terms of surviving. There's an argument that without knowing the baseline probability, that might not be so informative, even though it's mathematically attractive for us to model in a log odd space. As we make the model more complicated, now there's clear reasons for misinterpretation because we can't untangle the odds ratio directly. It's now confounded with everything else, and ultimately we need to make a prediction here. And to make a prediction, we have to be able to do that. So what kind of tools can we have? I want to report this on a probabilistic scale. The idea that in any way of giving this back in an odds form or in an odds ratio might not be that informative. If I could give some tool to somebody to make a prediction as a raw probability in this case, that might be useful. Nomograms are one particularly clever way of doing that, that have a long history. If you think of nomograms started in around the late 1800s, there's a classical nomogram in the middle. It's an analog, a graphical analog computing device. So if you want to work out BMI, take the two different explanatories, make your prediction in the middle of BMI. Right-hand side is a nice one for chi-square test, left-hand side a really complicated, visually attractive, difficult to use one for physiology. So how can we do this in R? Well, Frank Harrell's RMS package has a lovely nomogram function that if you, for any linear model that you can fit through his package, you can generate a static nomogram like this. So now you can pick the values of your factors and your covariates, get a predicted value on the log odd space and project it down as a probability. You also get an indication of variable importance. So we tried to expand on this. We said, well, why not use Shiny? Why not come up with a simple wrapper function? Look at the model at the bottom here. So it's a general linear model, a binomial link function, a logistic regression. But the package says, just take your model and the data frame and we'll immediately build for you the Shiny application, which is the dynamic nomogram. It supports a whole, so this is what you would get in this case. It has populated the correct factors in the model. It has taken the covariate and put into the correct range. And now the person can interact with that. So you can imagine that for different settings, you can get the responses on the probabilistic scale. So it will pick up the inverse link function depending on the model that you fitted. So you're getting the prediction on the right scale. Here's an example of a Cox proportional hazards model where you might be interested in the estimated survival. Again, across whatever values that are ever explanatories you've included in your model. And there's a nice feature that the risk set, we use some alpha blending on the risk set, so you get an idea that at least the level of precision or uncertainty is increasing as we go across time because we've less observations there. So imagine now you're reading a paper in a journal. There's no reason. Here's some, say, a regression model appearing in the top right-hand side that somebody like a clinician has to interact with. And good luck with that in some sense. There's no reason that you couldn't put a URL or a hyperlink to that model that brought you straight to the nomogram that was used that represents this particular model. So to do that, we've added in a DN builder function, which when you fitted your nomogram, it will generate out the UI, the server, and the global files that you need. You can now connect to wherever your Shiny server of interest is, and you can upload your nomogram there directly. This now means that in any publication that exists, you can have a hyperlink that brings somebody to that model. They can interact with it as a nomogram. If you look at the tabs in the top right-hand corner, the statisticians can go into the model summary piece and see exactly the model that was fitted. So there's space for us to interact with this model also and see, does this model make sense? You also, the idea of translation in this, where you could look at modifiable risk factors, and you can see people have fun seeing things like, oh, if I was gave up smoking, that could be the equivalent of 10 years of age, whatever. You can interact with the model. So we think translational statistics has a key role to play. I think dynamic nomograms are a useful translational tool. I'd like you to try this package out. It's a very nice teaching tool as well because it lets our students interact with the models they've generated. And there is an open question, should all nomograms be accompanied with the URL?
Hello, everybody. My name is Bernard. I work in GSK, and this talk is about the R package BVREC BLS, dealing with tolerance intervals and errors in variables regressions in method comparison studies. So this is a data set where the systolic blood pressure is measured by two devices, and we want to know if the two devices are equivalent. Is there a bias? Do they have the same accuracy? Can we convert from one device to the other one? So there are many questions that we can answer. And to do this, we have two different methodologies, the errors in variables models in the classical XY plot, or the Bland and Altman plot, with the MD plot, a mean difference plot. So now if you want just to plot the data with the package, you can use the package BVREC BLS, so it is on CRAN. It was developed with a collaboration between the University of Glasgow and Sanofi. So it is on CRAN, so don't hesitate to try it. And now if you want to start here, we can plot the data. So to plot the data, we can use the function rowPlot to plot the data in the XY plot on the left with the errors bars. Ideally, we should have Y equal X. Or we can plot the data in the MD plot on the right. Ideally, we should have zero with the means on the X-axis and the differences on the Y-axis. So in the XY plot, usually we focus on statistical hypotheses, while in the MD plot, we usually want to know if the differences are acceptable. But anyway, both approaches have been reconciled in a paper published last year, and the package provides everything we need to deal with that. So the agreement interval was proposed by Bland and Altman, but the tolerance intervals actually are easier to calculate, easier to interpret, and robust. We have the type 1 or the type 2. So to calculate the tolerance intervals, we can use the function. The function is called MD ORIS lines, and we have only three arguments, so it's very easy to use. Data, X column, Y column, that's it. And we can see on this example that the tolerance intervals are robust, so it is the blue or the green line. So they are robust against the outliers. But these lines are horizontal. So now if you want to model data, the BLS actually is a generalization of the Deming regression. It takes into account the error in both axes. So the BLS is the most general regression. So the BLS is the most general regression in the XY plot, and then we have a new regression called the CBLS that takes into account the correlation between the errors in the Bland-Altman plot. So the function is very easy to use. The function is called BLS or CBLS. One more time, only three arguments, data, X column, Y column. So it cannot be easier than that. Then we can plot the result with the XY plot, and we have the choice between four different intervals, the confidence interval, the confidence band, the prediction interval, or generalized prediction interval to predict the mean of Q future values. For the CBLS regression, it is exactly the same, except that we are in a Bland-Altman plot, so the means on the x-axis and the differences on the y-axis. And we have the four different statistical intervals available by the package. So to sum up, right now we have 18 functions, so the package will be updated anyway. We have five functions to plot the results, and more than 700 tests were realized to validate the package with Sanofi. So we have here a list of all the functions. And there are many options also. So to sum up, the tolerance intervals are better. BLS or CBLS are the most general regression. And for most of your work, you only need three arguments, the data, the X column, and the Y column. So it's very easy to use. Don't hesitate to give us a feedback. Thank you.
My name's Michael Deary, and I'm going to be talking to you about the landscape of meta-analysis packages which are available in R. I maintain and curate the task view about these, and as I've been going through that and building up the task view, obviously I've got a picture of what's there and what hopefully isn't there, which is a couple of things that I want to share with you so you can all go home and start coding. Meta-analysis, just in brief, is the combination and analysis of a number of primary studies, and there's obviously a lot more to it than that. And there are currently, as far as I can count them, about 80 plus packages on CRAN for doing this. And I was quite surprised when I drew this graph. There's an arrow between any two packages which depend, suggest, import. The rectangle is the main engines that I would regard, there are three of them. And the other packages provide enhancements or use the other packages. Some things are very extensively covered, the standard method of inverse variance weighting, getting ready for meta-analysis, and graphics, which has always been a strength of the meta-analytical literature and approach. Some are adequately covered. There's at least one package that does these more or less well. Some of them, there are both frequentist and Bayesian approaches. Unobserved studies is also covered. One of the things that isn't particularly well covered is any reliance on model checking. Basically, this is a form of the linear model, and after you've fitted a linear model, you'd normally try to check the assumptions. That's actually rather less well covered. As far as I know, there's only one of the packages that does that. Right, now, here's what we don't have at the moment. If you have some studies where you've got the individual participant data, and some studies where there are only summary statistics, there is discussion in the literature about how one might deal with this and combine all of them, other than just purely summarizing the IPD. And the other thing which is missing is an attempt to answer the question, have we got enough data yet, or do we need to carry on, and is it worth doing more experiments in this area? Right, so if you've got any suggestions as how to fill the gaps, as I say, I maintain the task view, so that means I don't have to show you my email address. You can just click on where it says task view and click on meta-analysis, and there's my email address. Simple. So I look forward to hearing from you. You may have noticed, by the way, in the abstract, I say there are three gaps, but such is the thoroughness with which I've reviewed the packages, I realized afterwards that one of them actually does fill the gap that I'd mentioned, so I haven't included that fortunately realized that before I did the slides. I would just have to say it's a package that looks like a work in progress, but it's there, so I can't say it's a gap. Okay, I didn't have 15 slides, which is why that one seems to be staying there for eternity. And since I'm the last speaker, that's a kind of handy.